After wishing everyone Shavuot Tov, let's take a look on Daf Mem Dalid Omer Aleph at the Mishnah, which is five lines down from the top of the page. And here we start the Sugya of Muktza in a very kind of profound way, really projecting us into Muktza. The Gemara mentioned some of the issues of Muktza earlier on this Daf, but it really starts with this Mishnah. The Mishnah records a machlokas between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon. We'll soon see that the Gemara is going to quote a brisa that identifies the Tanakama as Rabbi Yehuda. And the brisa is going to add a third shita in the Tanaim, and that's going to be the shita of Rabbi Eliezer bir Rabbi Shimon, the son of Rabbi Shimon. So this is the father. That's what we're studying in our Mishnah. Metaltalin ner chadash avalo yashan. First of all, what does the word ner mean? Now, in the English translation, he uses the word lamp. Okay, if everybody knows what a lamp is, that's fine. I mean, when I think of a lamp, I think of this electric lamp that I have here. But what we're talking about in a ner is a receptacle, and it was made either of metal or of earthenware, and we'll see there are many important differences between the two. And the oil was inside this receptacle. If you go to the museum, you'll see from the archaeologists, you know, some of the remnants of an old nair, you could see it. And basically, it's got a hole for the wick, and the oil drips down into the wick. Sometimes the oil has to be tipped a little bit, and that leaves us to a problem that we discussed in the past called shemiyata. Now, what's the difference between a ner chadash and a ner yashan? So a ner chadash, let's give it an extreme case where it was never used. It was absolutely never used. So for the first time that he uses it, it becomes already what's called yashan. So we're going to translate chadash, new, as unused, and yashan is used. Now, why does the Mishnah say avolo yashan, that we're not allowed to move a lamp that's been used? Right now, let's assume at this moment on Shabbos, in our scenario, the ner is empty. And basically, it's a kli, it's a utensil, it's a receptacle, could be used for many, many different things. But it's been used at least once in the past as a ner. Now it's on Shabbos, we're not using it as a ner. And now he wants to use it for any of the other functions. The only problem is, since he's used it in the past, it becomes what's called ma'us. Once you use a ner, some of the filth, so to speak, from the candle, from the wick, from the lighting, somehow gets absorbed. It's very difficult to clean such a utensil. So let's say he wants to eat his porridge in the morning in this ner. It's mos. It's this is called muktza machmas mius. In other words, going into Shabbos, if you would ask me, you know, would I want to use this ner? It's a ner yoshan. I would have probably said no. You know, I have to be very desperate to want to use that. It's yoshan, and that's because it's made of cheres. It's made of earthenware, and earthenware becomes mos once you use it. A ner yashan, on the other hand, a ner chadash, on the other hand, is absolutely crystal clear, you know, clean. It's not in any way filthy, it's not disgusting, it's not repulsive. And therefore, even though if you had asked me going into Shabbos, you know, what do I use this for? I my answer would have been, well, it's a brand new, it's never been used. I can use it for many, many different things. So everybody's going to agree here in this Mishnah that as far as a ner chadash is concerned, if I want to move around a ner chadash that's never been used, that's permitted. Then we get to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon omer kol haneres metaltelin, which means that according to Rabbi Shimon, this whole concept of mos, that something going into Shabbos is a bit repulsive because I've already used it in the past, that doesn't register on the radar screen of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon basically rejects muktzah. Now that's a very imprecise statement. And part of the fun of learning about muktzah in the Dapim that will be, you know, beginning Mem Dalet, Mem Hey, Mem Vav, is to try to figure out when have we passed the red line such that even Rabbi Shimon would agree that something is muktzah. But as far as Neros are concerned, so Rabbi Shimon doesn't have muktzah in Neros, because a ner is a kli, and a kli always has some sort of a use, and even though I've used it in the past and it's a little bit disgusting, but nevertheless, if I need it, you know, maybe I'll put my fruits inside of it. I don't know what I'm going to use it in any different way, and I'll survive it. However, as I said before, there's a point in which we pass all the red lines, and that's called Chutz Min HaNer HaDolek B'Shabbos. Now, what's a Ner HaDolek B'Shabbos? You lit it, let's assume, for the mitzvah of Ner Shabbos, and now you want to do one of two things. Actually, we can say one of three things. There are three possible things that you might want to do with this. Possibility number one would be to collect some of the ner, some of the shemen that overflows, and just put a kli, put some sort of a bowl, and collect that ner. That's number one. Number two, if you want to even be more bold, you might want to take out some of the oil from the ner while it's lit. And number three, you may want to wait until the ner is extinguished. So let's say an hour or two later, the ner goes out, and then you want to move the ner, use it for whatever purpose, take out the oil. And the answer to all of the above questions is no. It's awesome, according to Rabbi Shimon. So you're not allowed to move the candle while it's lit. You're not allowed to take oil out of the lamp, as he calls it, the ner, the receptacle, while it's lit. You cannot even collect any of the ner that might spill over while it's lit. What about after it goes out? And here we're going to see a contradiction, two different cases. One is called a classic ner, and the other is called kos ukara vashishis. So let's immediately begin the Gemara, and we'll talk about the status of the ner after it goes out, according to Rav Shimon. Tana Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa, Metaltelin ner chadash aval lo yashan, Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So this Braisa identifies the Tanakhama of our Mishnah as Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda accepts muktzah with regard to a ner that was used in the past because it becomes filthy, it becomes repulsive. And going into Shabbos, you would never anticipate that you would use this ner yashan. That's the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Now we have the sheet of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir omer kol haneros metaltelin chutz mi ner shedliku bo b'Shabbos. Now, what Rabbi Meir is introducing here into the whole sugi of muktzah is the concept of bein hashmoshos. And that means the following. On the one hand, Rabbi Meir doesn't accept a category called muktzah machmas mius, and even a ner yoshen is movable. It's a non muktzah, because going into Shabbos, there is some possibility that if need be, he will use the ner. Even though, again, it's kind of unlikely, it's a little bit disgusting, but it's a kli and it's not muktz. However, once you light this ner going into Shabbos, then the ner becomes muktz. And it matters not whether you've used this ner in the past, or this is the first time you're using it. Since it's the first time you're using it, and you've lit it going into Shabbos, Rav Meir says that you would not be allowed to tamper in any way with a ner that's lit going into Shabbos. And that's the status of the ner ben hashmashos entering into Shabbos. That status remains unchanged for the entire Shabbos. So Rabosai, the language here is very helpful if you can get it down pat, the lingo as I always call it, the terminology. Whenever you hear me talk about Bein HaShmoshos with regard to Muktzah, I mean the same as Migu. Okay, so Migu, I may sometimes use the word Migu, sometimes I'll use the word Bein HaShmoshos, but they both mean the same in our context of Muktzah. It means that if you have an object that's untouchable, so to speak, it's muktzah in Bein HaShmoshos, then we apply the principle of Migu and it remains muktzah for the entire balance of Shabbos, despite the fact that the reason that caused it to be muktzah is no longer. So now the candle is extinguished. It's an hour into Shabbos, and Rav Meir says it was lit going into Shabbos, it is muktzah for the entire Shabbos. That's called Migu. Migu diskatzoy le ben hashmashos diskatzoy le kule yoma. Once it was migu in ben hashmashos, it's muktzah for the entire Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon Omer chutz min anmer adolik b'Shabbos, but kavsa mutol italdala. Rabbi Shimon says that although Rabbi Meir is correct that while the ner is lit, it's out of my realm, I can't take out oil from that ner because that would cause it to be extinguished, to extinguish itself. That would be kibui, and that's one of the 39 malachos on Shabbos. And the oil is now dedicated for the mitzvah of Shabbos. I can't use it. But kavsa, now an hour late into Shabbos, the light went out. Mutal etaltala, because Rabbi Shimon rejects the principle of migu. He does not buy in to Rabbi Meir's point that since it was in the state of Isur during Bein HaShmashos, it remains Asur for the entire Shabbos. Is that really so? Now we read the next few words in the Braisa. Aval kos ukara vashishis. These are various kinds of receptacles that are full with a large volume of oil. Lo yazizem mimkoman. All of a sudden, Rabbi Shimon agrees to the concept of Bein HaShmashos, the concept of Migu. When the volume of oil is so great that he doesn't anticipate, you know, you have like, I'll give you an example. You know these Yahrzeit candles that last for 24 hours. In Nebuchadnezzar Avelim, they have these, you know, these candles that last for the whole Shiva. You know what I'm saying? That's what Kosukara Vashishis is. It will last if there's no wind, if there's no, some unforeseeable occurrence, it will last for the entire Shabbos. Says Rabbi Shimon, in such a case I agree that he puts it out of his mind when he goes into Shabbos for the entire Shabbos. And even though it went out in the middle of Shabbos, he had what's called a hesech hadas. He completely excluded it from use. He had no anticipation whatsoever that the Ner would go out somewhere before the end of Shabbos, because it's a kos karav hashishis, and it's got a volume of oil, that's already beyond the limitation. We're going to have other cases similar later on with regard to a sukkah. A sukkah, the walls of the sukkah, the schach of the sukkah, the noise sukkah, it's all designated for the mitzvah of sukkah. What happens if all of a sudden a wind comes and blows down the sukkah? That case, even according to Rav Shimon, is going to be mukta. Why? Because he has no anticipation that some wind is going to come and blow down his sukkah. I'm not talking about a sukkah ru'uah. Then there's another case of a sukkah that's very weak, and you could already anticipate that it might fall down. That's a different story. So basically, the principle of Rabbi Shimon is the following. He rejects mukta when I can anticipate the possibility, I don't know if it's 10%, if it's 20%, but there's some statistical possibility that I will use this during the course of Shabbos. Going into Shabbos, I realize that although it might be a little bit far-fetched, but I might want to use this, and I might be able to use it. But if that Isur, like in the case of a Ner Dolok, a Ner that's lit, and the volume of oil inside the Ner is such that he has no anticipation whatsoever that the status of this Ner would change, then even Reb Shimon agrees, that's called Hesek Hadas, that generates Muktzah, and even if, surprise of surprises, the cause of Muktzah in the Isur is gone, it remains Muktzah. So that, according to Reb Shimon, all you need in order to say that something is Mukhan, it's prepared for Shabbos, is to say that I can anticipate that the situation is going to change. It's a classic Ner, it has a limited volume, it's going to last for another hour, another 2 hours, and then it's going to go out, and then I'm allowed to benefit from the oil, I'm allowed to move the Ner. But if there's no anticipation whatsoever, the Gemara is going to give a case later on, what's called grogros vitzimukim. He takes grapes or figs and he places them up on Erev Shabbos on his roof, so that the sun will beat down and eventually dry these, make it into raisins or dried figs. That's muktzah even according to Rav Shimon. Because once again, that's Hesek Hadas. He does not assume that he would want to use these grogos v'tzimukim, or he'll be able to use them and eat them during Shabbos. That's already an extreme kind of a muktzah with a Hesek Hadas. He doesn't anticipate in his wildest dreams that he might want to benefit from this object during Shabbos. He'll be able to, he'll be permitted to, and therefore it becomes muktzah if, surprise and surprises, the things change.
Rabbi, can I just ask a piece of information?
Sure.
Rabbi Eliezer, then Rabbi Shimon, is that the same Rabbi Eliezer as we have throughout Shas? Because here he's specifically described as...
Right. No, there are three Rabbi Eliezers. There's Rabbi Eliezer Ahurkanis, there's Rabbi Eliezer Ben Azariah, and then there's Rabbi Eliezer Ben Rav Shimon.
Oh, so it's Rabbi Eliezer Ben Ahurkanis, isn't it?
Right. That's, as far as I remember, that's...
Okay, fine, thank you.
Oh, Rabbi Eliezer Ben, since you mentioned it, Rabbi Eliezer Ben Shimon Omer, Mistapek Minaner Hakova. Wow. Now, what does the word hakava mean? Hakava means that the flame is flickering. You've seen it. It's jumping up and down. It means that there's not enough oil that's going into the wick. And in such a case, there's no iser kibui. So kava describes a reality in the present that is something going on, something that's now happening. It's now going out. And if it's now going out, then mistapek min aner, Rabbi Eliezer goes a step further and he says that even while the Ner is still active, it's still alive, he's allowed to take out the oil. That's not called kibui. Why? Because it's on its way out. So when he takes out the oil for his own purposes, he's not causing any sort of premature extinguishing. Now, Rabbi Eliezer goes a step further and he says, look, what about the oil that drips over? He says, even while the nair is lit, he's allowed to enjoy the benefit of that oil. Basically, in a word, Rabbi Eliezer rejects muktzah entirely. He doesn't have the whole entity of muktzah, whereas we discussed before that his father, Rabbi Shimon, does accept muktzah in very rare and extreme cases. Like, for example, a nair that's doluk going into Shabbos, that's muktzah. And when it changes its status and it goes out, at that point we can discuss whether it's muktzah or not. And Rabbi Shimon is going to say it's not muktzah at that point because he anticipated that it would go out an hour or two. But in the case of a kos, hashishis, and so forth, then he doesn't anticipate it. Even Rabbi Shimon has muktzah. All that is gone according to Rabbi Eliezer. Omer Abaye, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, sover lo kavua bechada, upol galei bechada. Rabbi Eliezer accepts his father's shita with regard to one halacha, but rejects it with regard to another halacha. Savala ke avua, he accepts the opinion of his father bechada de lesle muktza. He doesn't accept muktza. And again, even though Reb Shimon, his father, does accept muktza, but not the muktza of Rabbi Yehuda in any event. The muktza of Rabbi Yehuda means that unless you go out of your way and you can tell me going into Shabbos, I expect to use this, then it's muktza. That muktza, both Rabbi Shimon and his son, Rabbi Eliezer, reject. You don't have to go out of your way to assume, in a positive sense, that everything, every object that you want to use, you will use, and you prepare it for use, you designate it for use. That's not so. But polagale bechado, the ilu avua savar kava ein lo, kava in lo kava lo. Rabbi Shimon, his father, holds that while the lamp is lit, don't go near it. Don't even dream of enjoying the oil or taking out the oil. At this point, the Nair is dedicated to the mitzvah of Nair Shabbos, and you can't go near it. And it doesn't matter whether or not the Nair is absolutely strong and healthy, or even if it's on its way out. Rabbi Shimon says, as long as the Nair, that's a mitzvah dika Nair, and don't even touch it. Later on, we're going to see, I don't know if we'll get it today, maybe tomorrow, that there's a concept called muktzah l'mitzvaso. It's something that's dedicated to its mitzvah. Then even Rav Shimon agrees you can't tamper with it. But when it goes out, and now you're talking about classic muktzah, well, if there was a limited amount of oil, and he anticipated that in an hour or two it'll go out, he's allowed to enjoy the benefit of the oil, he's allowed to move the nair. Ve'iu, now we get to Rabbi Eliezer himself, Savar, he holds Afal Gavdol Koba, even while the flame is alive and active, you can enjoy the benefits of the oil, whether or not you want to take out oil because the light is flickering, as we said before, or alternatively, if the oil spills over and you accept it, you receive it in a utensil. But in the case of a very serious volume of oil, in the case of a bowl, a large bowl that he fills up with oil, so the Gemara asks, Maishna Hani, why does Reb Shimon agree that in this case, even if it goes out in the middle of Shabbos, he's not allowed to touch it? Omar Ula has one approach, and Marzutra another approach. According to Ula, Seifa son Rabbi Yehuda, this piece Aval Kos Ukara Vashishes Lo Yazizim Komo, that's an extension of Rabbi Yehuda. It's a little out of place in the Mishnah, and it's a bit of a push, but that's what we're going to do. We're going to take the last line of the Mishnah, and we're going to use it as an addendum to the opening line in the Mishnah, and it reflects the Shita Rabbi Yehuda. Again, the obvious question is going to be, why did the Mishnah bother tell me that, according to Rabbi Yehuda? Hey, if according to Rabbi Yehuda, a classic Nair that has a limited volume is muktzah, how much more so it has a greater volume? But nevertheless, This is what Ula is willing to do, because Ula understands that Rabbi Shimon rejects the concept of Migu completely, and according to Ula, Rabbi Shimon only accepts that very temporary kind of Migu when it's being used and is an active flame for the sake of the mitzvah of Shabbos. And according to Ula, it matters not how much of a volume you put in. Even if you don't anticipate in your wildest dreams that it's going to go out during Shabbos, there's no such thing as muktzah. Now the candle's extinguished, it's no longer an Ner Mitzvah, it's no longer an Ner Shabbos, you're allowed to benefit from it. Maskif la mar zutra, ihochi mai avol. The word avol in our Mishnah, or chutz, avol, right, means that there's an exception to the rule. According to you, Ula, this is not an exception to the rule. This is just applying the rule of Rabbi Yehuda one step further. So why does the Mishnah say avol? Or actually, the Mishnah used the word chutz, but let's take a look at the Braisa. The Braisa says the following, right? And then it says chutz min haner shedlika bo b'shabbos. Correct? Oh no, then it says, I'm sorry, avol kosu kara vashishis. Okay, so in our Mishnah it says chutz, and here in the Braisa it says avol. Now why avol? Avol means in contrast. If Rav Shimon holds that there's no mukta in the regular case of an heir, avol. But now it's a large volume of oil, then I understand the word avol. But according to Ula, that we're going to Rav Yehuda, then this is another application of the general rule of Rav Yehuda. Why does it say avol? El Omer Rav Zutra. Rav Zutra thinks it's a TKO, and now we have to reinterpret the Brais Liolam, Rabbi Shimon. The Kika Shai Rabbi Shimon Vener Zuta. Ner Zuta literally means a small amount of oil, but really it means your classic oil, your classic lamp or Ner. The Daite Luye. In his mind, he's thinking in an hour or two it's going to go out, and then I'll use the oil. Avol hani dinafishi lo, but these kind of bowls which have a very large volume of oil, and he doesn't anticipate at all that it'll go out in the middle of Shabbos. It's a 24 plus hour yard site candle. In such a case, if it happens to go out, there was no daite luye. On the contrary, it's lav daite luye. That's called Hesek Hadas. When he has total Hesek Hadas, even Reb Shimon agrees that it's Mukta. So Reb Shimon does accept, and this is the Maskana, the Gemara Mukta. And this Gemara that we're learning now is really a trailblazer for all of these various sugyas about Reb Shimon, about Mukta. Some of them are here in Perek Shlishi, others are in the end of Masechta Shabbos. And we're always trying to analyze under what circumstance would Rav Shimon accept muktzah? And basically the principle that we have right now is something that he doesn't anticipate at all. Not even a thought would cross his mind that he would possibly be able to use this on Shabbos. And all of a sudden, surprise, as we said, circumstances change. That's the muktzah that Rabbi Shimon accepts, because that's almost a positive Hesek Hadas. You know, when he lit this shishas, he already in his mind put it out of his mind for the entire Shabbos. It could be, by the way, and this we'll get into later when we talk about Grogos V'Tzimukim, that the fact that he actively lit the candle, that also kicks in here and plays a role. That's called Haktzah V'Yadayim. Again, I don't want to confuse you, we'll get to that later on. Vasanya, the Gemara says, what do we do with a Braisa that says Moser Hashem and Shemin Eber Shebakara Asur Reb Shimon Matir? The Braisa says that if you have leftover Shemin after the candle goes out, according to Tanakama, this Braisa, you're not allowed to use that Shemin, but according to Reb Shimon, you can enjoy the benefit of that Shemin. Hasam Kara Dumya Diner. Even though the word Kara appears in that Braisa, we're talking about a small bowl. And how do I know it? Because in the same breath, the Braisa says Ner, which is, you know, classic, a limited amount of oil, and Kara. So that's called Kara Dumya Diner. It's a small bowl. Hacha. But in our Braisa, Ka'ara Dumya Dekos. The word Ka'ara is written in the same breath as the word Kos, and Kos means a large cup, and we're talking about a very substantial volume of oil, such that, as we said before, he doesn't anticipate in his wildest dreams that it's going to go out on Shabbos. Now, at this point, we want to get back to a discussion that we touched upon in the Mishnah called Muktzah Machmas Mius, something that's been used, and therefore it's kind of repulsive. So he rejects it in his mind because he doesn't want to use something that's already been used. You know, this kind of an earthenware that was already in the past lit. So there's some amount of filth. Om Rabbi Zera, Pamot. So now we're talking about a specific type of a ner. This ner is not Muktzah Machmas Mius, because it's not just a receptacle that's made of earthenware, which gets kind of filthy, but rather it's something that's made of metal. And since it's made of metal, it's very easy to clean it out. And we assume that from one use to the next, he cleans it out. In this case, it's no longer Muktzah Machmas Mius. It's not disgusting. It's not like the case of earthenware that clean it, it's clean as much as you will, you know, with all the scrubs and everything, you won't be able to clean it. And therefore, Likav of a Shabbos is Lidivrei Amatir Asur Ulidivrei Oser Mutter. So let's work backwards. Let's get the easy case. Lidivrei Oser Mutter. Rabbi Yehuda was the one who was Machmir in Muktzah, and he said that an Er Yashan is Muktzah. He would agree that the Pamot is Mutter. Why? Because the Er Yashan that was used once in the past is Muktzah Machmas Mius, but a Pamot which is made of metal is not Muktzah Machmas Mius. There's nothing disgusting about it. Now we get to the first part. L'divrei Amatir Asur. The Matir in the Mishnah here is referring to Rabbi Meir. And although Rabbi Meir agrees that there is no Muktzah in the case of Muktzah Machmas Mius in an Er Yashan, and therefore he's Matir in Er Yashan, but in this case of a Pamot, Rabbi Meir agrees that it's Asur. And here what we're introducing is the Ben Hashmashos concept, if you recall. And we have to assume now that in the case of a Pamot, if he lights it for Shabbos use, then even if it goes out during Shabbos, Rav Meir agrees, not because of Muktzah Machmas Mius, but because of the Isur of Shabbos. As we said before, when you light a candle, according to all the shittas with the exception of Rabbi Eliezer, you're not allowed to tamper with the oil because you might cause it to go out. And therefore it's Muktzah Machmas Isur. And that Muktzah Machmas Isur that begins going into Shabbos will continue throughout Shabbos.
I need one minute just to
read this note over here, because I know it was an important. Just one second. So metal, he says, is not Mohs. Just one second. I'm sorry. Just give me a second here, and then I'll answer your question. Rabbi Zera. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So why does Rabbi Yehuda permit it if it was Muktzah Ben Hashmashos?
Because according to Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Yehuda accepts Muktzah Machmas Mius in the case of a Ner Cheres, but in the case of a Pamot, that was, yeah. You see, Rabbi Zera thought that Rabbi Yehuda only accepts Muktzah Machmas Mius. Let's take a look in the next line of the Gemara. Lememra Shall we assume, according to Rabbi Zeira, to Rabbi Yehuda, Mukta Machmas Mius Islay, but Mukta Machmas Isur Leslay? In other words, for some strange reason, Rabbi Zeira thought that if you go back to our Mishnah, assuming the Tanakhama of our Mishnah reflects Rabbi Yehuda Shita, Metaltel in Ner Chadosh, Avalo Yoshan. And this exhausts the whole subject of Mukta, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if we identify Tanakhama as Rabbi Yehuda, namely a Ner Yoshan. Why? Because it's Muksa Machmas Mius. That's it. There's no other category. Which is a Pella, and the Gemara is going to reject this immediately, but in Rabbi Zeira's frame of reference, the one who introduces Mukta in the sense of Mukta Machmas Isur is only Rabbi Meir, who's quoted not in the Mishnah but in the Braisa, because Rabbi Meir says Ner Shed Liku Bo B'Shabbos. That phrase, Ner Shed Liku Bo B'Shabbos, which indicates that since it was Osir going into Shabbos, therefore it remains Mukta for the entire balance of Shabbos, that's a concept that was not introduced in that Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda in that Mishnah, Tanakhama Mishnah, never mentioned anything. And for that matter, even in the Braisa. The Braisa says, Torah Rabbanim, Metaltel Ner Chadosh, Avalo Yashan, De Rabbi Yehuda. It's only Rabbi Meir who introduces the fact that if you lit a candle going into Shabbos, it remains Mukta for the entire balance of Shabbos, which we called Mukta, which we called Migu or Ben Hashmoshos. So therefore, in this particular case of a Pamot, according to Rabbi Meir, if you lit it be going into Shabbos, there's no difference between a Pamot and a Ner Cheres. Rabbi Meir doesn't operate with Mukta Machmas Mius. The only issue is if it was lit going into Shabbos, and therefore even a Pamot is going to be Mukta. But Rabbi Yehuda never mentioned this concept of Mukta Machmas Isur. Right, Rabbi Yehuda, was only focused on Ner Yoshan. So the Gemara says, "Vatanya, but we have a brisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Aneros Shel Mateches Metaltel in Chutz Min Aner Shidliku Bo B'Shabbos." So we see explicitly that Rabbi Yehuda has two categories of Mukta. Not only the case of a Ner Yoshan, which becomes Mukta going into Shabbos for the entire Shabbos, even if it's not lit. But even in the case of an Ner Chadosh, which is not Mukta Machmas Mius, he agrees to Rabbi Meir and accepts the principle of Mukta Machmas Isur, that if it was also going into Shabbos, it remains also for the entire balance of Shabbos. So let's just summarize. The machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir relates to the following. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda has two categories of Mukta, Rabbi Meir only has one category of Mukta. Rabbi Yehuda has a category of Mukta called Mukta Machmas Mius in a Ner Yoshan, which was used in the past, and even though now it's not lit, it's Mukta. And Rabbi Yehuda has, in addition to Mukta Machmas Mius, Mukta Machmas Isur, and that would apply even to a brand new Ner, and it's not Mos, it's made of metal, it's a Pamot, but once it was lit before Shabbos, and it became Mukta, it's Mukta for the entire Shabbos, that's called Migu. Rabbi Meir rejected Mukta Machmas Mius. So if I have a lamp that's not being used, it's not Mukta, and that would apply even if it was an Ner Yoshan, because Rabbi Meir rejects the category called Mukta Machmas Mius. But Rabbi Meir does accept the principle of Mukta Machmas Isur, that if going into Shabbos it was lit, it remains Mukta for the entire Shabbos. Eli Yitmar.
They both agree on Migu.
Correct. They both accept Migu, and the Machlokas is about a Ner Yoshan, which is Mukta Machmas Mius, even though it's not lit. And that's where Rabbi Yehuda introduces a whole new category of Mukta, which Rabbi Meir rejected. Eli Yitmar, Hochi Yitmar. Oh, Rabbi Zera, Pamochet, Likuol of Beshabbos, Direakol Osu. If it was lit going into Shabbos, then both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda agree that it's Osir. And the Chiddush is that Rabbi Yehuda has this category of Mukta. But lo idliku olav, if you're talking about just a lamp that's designated for the use as a lamp, and he wants to use it as a receptacle, it's diriyah kol mutter, everyone would agree if it's metal, like a pamot, then it's mutter, because it's not Mukta Machmas Mius. But if it was made of cheres, then Rabbi Yehuda would say it's Mukta, and Rabbi Meir would say it's not. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Mita sheyichta lemos asa letaltala. Now, Rabosai, I'm going to put my neck out a little bit here on the line. I don't know if what I'm about to tell you is true, but I think a mita in the old days, which is translated loosely as a bed, is a little bit different than our concept of a bed. I have no proof of this. It's just my own guess. A bed in the old days had various compartments. In other words, they used it in many different ways. It's kind of like if you have today maybe a high-rise where you put a mattress underneath the bed, if you know what I mean. So they would have compartments because they were very tight on space, and they would use a bed even for storage purposes. And Rabbi Yehuda, the name of Rav, says that if you designate that bed, not just as a bed for sleeping, but on the contrary, you want to use it for mos, and in some sense there were compartments where you could put coins, then the bed itself becomes mukta. Now, what we have in front of us here, Rabbi Osai, is the opening into a big, big sugya, mita sheyichta lemos. Because what's happening here is that you're taking something that's absolutely non-mukta, namely a bed, and you're designating it for mukta. Again, it doesn't mean that the bed is changed in any way. You didn't change it. But you designate it for mukta. Now, why is mos mukta? Mos is a mukta which apparently even Rabbi Shimon could agree to. Because in all our discussions about Rabbi Shimon and mukta, we're talking about whether it was something that you imagined you would use it, perhaps. But there are certain items, and I think we've mentioned this in the past, which are completely excluded from any use whatsoever. That's not even a discussion. That's called Eitzim Vavonim. That means something like earth or stones or a piece of wood. We're going to have a sugi about chatzotzros, which is a musical instrument. These kind of things have no use whatsoever, no function. And even though technically, as far as Tumah V'Tahara is concerned, they might be susceptible to Tumah insofar as they have a Shem Kli, but as far as Shabbos is concerned, it has no Shem Kli, because it's not usable. Now again, if you designate it for use, that's a little different. Here's a case of mos, currency. Currency, coins, have no use whatsoever. They have the same status as Eitzim Vavonim. And that's pure mukta. The chiddush here of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav is that you can take an object that's not mukta and you can make it into mukta by designating it for the purpose to function. We'll call it as an accessory. Here's where you can, in the back of your mind, again, this has to do with lumdus, but if you want to think about the word bittel, where that object now becomes batel, it loses its identity as a separate independent object because you've designated for use as something, as an accessory for something that's real, real mukta. So let's say, for example, I don't know, I would have a flat surface of a kli, some sort of flat pan, and I would decide I'm going to put all my rubbish in there. I'm going to put Eitzim, Vavonim. Then it could be, and maybe even Reb Shimon would agree, that now that pan itself, insofar as it's batel, becomes secondary to all the stuff, the rubbish that I put on it, it itself becomes mukta. And this is very close to a concept called basis, which is again a very big sugya in mukta. And it's all over Masechta Shabbos, here, there, and elsewhere, called bosses, which means that it is batel to the object that's on top of it. And here, since you designated this bed to function for mos, and mos, we said, was absolute intrinsic mukta, the bed itself becomes batel to the mos. Now, I'm not telling you that Rabbi Shimon would buy into what we see here in the name of Rav. No. Here is a case where he didn't actually put the mos on the bed. He made a verbal statement that I intend to put the mos on the bed. He never actually did so. And according to those who accept muktzah, not Rabbi Shimon, let's say, for example, Rabbi Yehuda, once you made that verbal declaration, you've actually changed, based on your mental and verbal decision, you've changed the nature of a non-muktzah object, and now it serves as a secondary to a muktzah object, and it becomes muktzah. Now, we have to take a step back and compare this to a ner. We said that if a ner was not lit, it's just a utensil, then unless it's mos, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not muktzah. Even though clearly, in your mind, a lamp is used for lighting purposes. So, Meisvei Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, what are we going to do with that Mishnah? The Mishnah says, Metaltel in ner chadash aval lo yashan. Now, a ner chadash was never actually used, but nevertheless, it was certainly designated as a ner. And the Gemara says the following. Here we're looking on Daf Mem Dalid Omid Beis. Uma ner de lahachi avida. In the case of a ner, when you go into a manufacturer, you know, and he's selling neros, you know, it has a big sign on it, here's where you want to buy your neros, it's absolutely dedicated for the purpose of functioning as a ner. But kilo it likuba, but if it was not lit, so there's no muktzah machmas mius, there's no muktzah machmas isur, that's the case in ner yosh, a ner chadosh, is shari litaltule, we're allowed to do it, even though it's certainly designated as a ner, is mita, if you go into a bed store, he's not selling you a compartmentalized bed for the purpose of hiding your currency. It's low kolshkein. Certainly it shouldn't be muktzah. So now we have to backtrack a little bit and reformulate the statement of Rabbi Yehuda Merav in order to reconcile that with the case of a ner. If a ner is not mukta, why should this bed be mukta? Eliyit mar hachid mar om Rabbi Yehuda Merav mita sheyichta lemos. So he made that statement that I'm going to put mos on this mita. Hiniach ola olea mos osul etaltala. Lo hiniach olea mos mutul etaltala. So that according to Rav, it becomes muktzah if you could fulfill two conditions. You have to check off two boxes. Number one, he verbally declared that he is going to use this object, which is non-muktzah, for the sake of muktzah. And number two, at least on one occasion, he actually implemented that statement. And he used it for that muktzah. So if you have A plus B, then it becomes muktzah. But lo iniach olea mos, mutul etaltala, the verbal declaration itself is not sufficient to make it muktzah, because he never actually followed through and implemented his desire. Now let's talk about the reverse case. Lo yichta lemos, what happens if you have a non-muktzah object like a bed, and he never made a verbal declaration that he's going to use it, but yesh olea mos, now there are mos. Again, whatever it is, like by chance, without even making a decision that he's going to use it for mos, he put the mos on the bed on Shabbos. Is then osul etaltala. And that itself is sufficient to create muktzah. So again, if you're talking about a bed that does not have mos on it, then you need to fulfill two conditions. Condition number one is he made a verbal declaration that this bed will be designated for muktzah, for money. And number two, on at least one occasion in the past, he has used it for mos. But now we're going to talk about a case where he didn't designate it, and there are mos on the bed. Is yesh olem mos osul etaltala, ein olem mos mutul etaltala. But vehu shelo yeh olea bein hashmashos. Here's where the Gemara explicitly mentions the migu concept of bein hashmashos. So now let's go back to that case of a ner. We have a ner, and the ner was not used on this particular Shabbos. It's a ner that's been used in the past. It has been used in the past. Let's say it's a ner. It's a ner yoshan that's made of metal, and therefore it's not muktzah machmas mius. So even Rabbi Yehuda would say you're allowed to use the ner because there's no flame. The flame in the case of ner is parallel to the mos in the case of the mita. There's no flame on this ner. Ella what? You designated it, correct? But let's assume that you've never used it. Let's take the case of a ner chadash, and then we'll get to the case of the metal, of the metal ner. Right? We said that a metal ner, even if it was used in the past. So now what we're saying is the following. That ner is a case where he never actually verbally designated it. So if it's lit now, then for sure, that's like the case of Hiniach Olel Mos. And Rabbi Yehuda goes on and insists, and here it bears on board as well, that Migu applies. And if it was used now, it's like the case of a Mita where there were Mos, where even if the Mos would fall off the bed in the middle of Shabbos, the bed remains Muksa. That's called Migu. And that reflects the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir, about Bein HaShmashos. If, on the other hand, he never used this ner on Shabbos, then it depends. A and B, do we have two conditions that were fulfilled? A, he verbally designated it for lighting, and B, he actually used it in one occasion in the past. So if you have a ner yoshan, but it's made of metal, and it's not lit, then Rabbi Yehuda is going to say it's not muktzah. Why? Because although it's been used in the past, but it's lacking the other condition. He never designated it. So if he would make a verbal declaration, and he would say the following statement, I pronounce that this ner is used specifically for lighting. And in the past, he's used it on one occasion. It's metal, so it's not muktzah machmas mius. Then we would apply the principle of muktzah. If, on the other hand, it's lit going into Shabbos, then I don't need any other conditions. Then it remains muktzah for the entire balance of Shabbos based on the principle of migu.
Could I
ask
you, is that possible?
Yeah, sure.
Come back to the bed. The whole way through, the Gemara uses the word metalti, which means to move the bed. But are you allowed to lie on the bed and sleep in the bed?
Correct.
So it's only moving it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. What I meant to say is when it says that you're not allowed to be metaltalit, which would apply in one of two conditions, either A, if there are mos on the bed going into Shabbos,
right,
or B, if you A, designated it, and also you used it once for mos,
right,
then in those cases, when it says a metaltal, it means you're not allowed to use the bed at all for anything, even for lying on it.
Right. So there's no such concept as a dual use.
No, once something is muktzah, you're not allowed to benefit from it. We're going to have a sugya later on about leaning on something that's muktzah, where you don't move it, and you just simply benefit because it's holding you up, whether that's considered benefiting from it. But other than that, muktzah includes any benefit from muktzah. Tiltul, and I admit it's a little bit confusing because, pedagogically, I wouldn't have used the word tiltul. I would have said also lehenos mimenu, because basically muktzah is asur b'anah. But the Gemara chooses to use the word tiltul. But tiltul is indicative of an entire category.
It doesn't mean moving, it means
using. I say tiltul here if in the broader context means using.
Okay,
I see we're running low on time, but let's see if we could just finish at least the daf for today in the next 5 minutes. Let's see. Omar Ula says the following. Masiv Rabbi Lazar. Now we have a Mishnah in Masechta. In Masechta Kelim, and this is the famous Mishnah called Muchni. Now, how could a Mishnah in Kelim be famous? That's a good question. I mean, Kalim is one of the largest Masechtas in Shas. So there's no such thing as a famous Mishnah, but I say it's a famous Mishnah because of the Gemara in Shabbos. Nobody knows Kalim, but they know this Mishnah in Kalim because of the Gemara in Shabbos. And this is the famous Mishnah called Muchni. So Muchni is a wagon that sits on wheels. Now, what's the status? Kalim is all about Taurus, about susceptibility to Tumah. What's the status of the wheel, which is called the Muchni, as far as Kabbalah's Tumah is concerned? Is it really one entity with the wagon itself, or it's a separate entity? And we'll see how many nafkaminas we can come up with. And basically this Mishnah says it all depends. How do you attach the wheel to the wagon? Now, in our context, we usually assume that the wheel is attached in a very permanent way. That's why, Chas Shalom, if you get a flat tire, you know, you don't want to change the tire unless you really know what you're doing. Because the tire has to be absolutely solidified in its you know, bolts and nails. But back in the day, when they had a wagon, and the wheels could be used from one wagon to another wagon, so they only attached it in a very temporary way. That's what the Mishnah says, Muchni Shalah. Shalah is in feminine, referring to this wagon, which is in feminine. The Muchni is the wheel. Bizman Shehi Nishmetes Ein Chiberla. When it's a temporary kind of attachment, which makes it easy for, again, hopefully it's not going to roll off while you're dragging the wagon or riding the wagon, but it's tight, but not that tight, and you can untighten the bolts with ease so that you can move it to another wagon. So that's called, in the language of the Mishnah, Nishmetes. Nishmetes, interesting, it's a Mishnaic word, but it's really Lashon Kodesh, and even in modern Hebrew we use that word Nishmetes. It's Ein Chiberla, which means that the Muchni, the wheel, is considered a separate entity. It's not one entity and batel to the agalah, to the wagon. And therefore, number one, ein nibdedes ima. There's a look that if you have a very large utensil that could actually contain a volume of 40 saw, then that's not considered a movable utensil, and therefore it's not susceptible to Kabbalah's Tumah. And the law is that in order to measure 40 saw, we do what's called displacement. We have this also in Yoredeya with regard to Hilchas Bittel, you know, in Tarovis. You know, you want to know, you know, how large is the egg, so you throw it into it, you see what's displaced, you know, what splashes overboard. So here also, we can imagine you take the whole wagon and you throw it into water, how much water would be displaced? And the question is, can you add the wheels as well? And if you add the wheels, you get up to 40 saw. So if it's Nishmetes, then it's a separate entity, and it would have no impact on the wagon itself. You'd have to weigh the wagon without its wheels to determine whether it could have the weight of 40 saw. V'ein matzeles ima bi'ol ames. So now what we have is, we have a mess that's underneath this wagon. And the question is there something called a chatzitza between the mess and an object that's up on top? What do I mean by on top? So let's say if the mess is underneath the wagon and you have kalim in the wagon, those kalim will become tameh, unless there's an absolute separation between the corpse and the kalim. Again, we'd have to go into detail, but just in general. Now, what happens if you have a kli that's on top of the wheel? Well, if the wheel would be identified together with the wagon, it would be matzelis. That would mean it would prevent that utensil that's sitting on top of the wheel from contracting tumah. But if we view the wheel as a separate entity, then it's ena matzelis. The wheel does not have that necessary propensity, again we'd have to go into detail here, to save and protect the tumah. So that kli that's sitting on top of the wheel would in fact contract tumah. But the most important thing about the Mishnah is the next line, for our purposes. V'ein gorin osa b'shabes b'zman sheyesh olea mos. Okay, again, it's hard to imagine how you would put mos on top of a round wheel, but let's grant the engineering is possible. So you have mos, that you know, a small amount of mos on a very large wheel, is then, if you were to view, let's say in a case of Bizman She'ein Nishmetes, where there's a chibur, and you would view the wheel as one entity together with the wagon, then in such a case, you would not be impressed by the fact that there's mos on top of the wheel, because the wagon itself is not a buses, it's not holding on to the mos. But if I view the wheel, the mukhni, as a separate entity unto itself, because it's eina nishmet, because it's nishmetes, because it's not tied permanently down, then you can't move the wheel, because the wheel is holding on to the mos on top of the wheel. So the Gemara now analyzes meticulously the language of the Mishnah. And the Mishnah says, Ein gorin osa b'shabes, b'zman sheyesh olea mos, meaning there's mos on the wheel, and therefore you can't drag the wheel. The implication is, ha ein olea mos, sharia. That now I go to the wheel, and I want to move and drag the wheel so that the wagon will move. It's on Shabbos. And guess what? There are no mos on top of the wheel. They fell off. Or a bird came and lifted them. Sharia, I'm allowed to do so, because the Mishnah limits it. The Iser of Ein Gorin Osav Shabbos is because Bizman Sheyesh Olea Mos. Right now it has mos on it. Afal Gav Davilei Havialei Ben Hashmoshos. So there were mos on top of this wheel going into Shabbos, but as we said before, the mos, you know, took flight, and in the middle of Shabbos, now you're allowed to drag the wheel. How do we understand that Mishnah? We just finished saying that both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir agree to the principle of Migu, Diskatsoy, etc., that if it's there, Ben Hashmoshos, like for example the case we had mos on top of the bed going into Shabbos, then even if you remove the mos, the bed remains muktzah for the entire Shabbos. And the answer is, Hahi Rabbi Shimoni, the Lesle muktzah. Rabbi Shimon did not accept the principle of Migu. He's not interested in what happened to Ben Hashmoshos. You remember he had a nair that was dull going into Shabbos, and went out in the middle of Shabbos, and he anticipated that might happen, then it's not muktzah. Why isn't it muktzah? Because now there's no reason, the original cause of muktzah is completely gone. For Rabbi Yehuda, V'Rav, but Rav himself, who said that if there are mos going into Ben Hashmoshos on top of the bed is muktzah for the entire Shabbos, Ki Rabbi Yehuda Svirle, he holds right Rabbi Yehuda, and he accepts the principle of Migu. Hachinami Mistabra on the top of Mem Hey, which we'll pick up tomorrow, Mirtz Hashem, Dirav, Ki Rabbi Yehuda Svirle, because of another statement of Rav, and based on this statement of Rav, which Mirtz Hashem will see tomorrow, Bezer Hashem, we have a principle of Migu Diskatsoy L'Ben Hashmoshos, which Rav is going to implement in the case of Ner Al Gavi Dekel, and therefore we assume that Rav holds like Rabbi Yehud. So we'll stop here, and we'll pick it up Mirtz Hashem tomorrow on the top of the Amud on Memhei Amud Aleph.